If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain!
Here.
Captain!
Report.
Signatures detected!
Shields up!
Signatures detected!
Red alert!
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order!
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain!
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair!
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons?
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast by the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
Do you think there are a lot of people that listen to this that don't listen to The Greatest Generation?
Nope.
We hear about it every so often. Like, I found out about The Greatest Generation through The Greatest Discovery. But it's hard for me to imagine somebody, like, finding The Greatest Discovery and saying, you know what I need more of? This.
I just don't think of our work in that way. Like, I've always felt like it's a one-way street.
Uh-huh.
People driving the wrong way on the podcast road.
Oh, yeah.
Like, just don't occur to me.
Jason Bourne going through the channel.
I mean, but at the same time, like, I don't audition new podcasts very often. Like, I pretty much stick to the 4 to 6 that I'm always running.
Mm-hmm.
But the last time I started a new one, I was totally confounded with what I needed to do. Like, I tried it out. This is the suggestion that Jesse Thorne always has when he's asked, like, where do you start on podcasts with hundreds of episodes? He's like, just start where they're at and then go forward. You don't need to listen to them all.
Yeah.
But I started to try to listen to them all on a new podcast I was enjoying. And it's tough.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like filling up your email inbox with like 300 messages that you need to take care of.
Right. Yeah, there's a show I listen to on WFMU that's it's a podcast now, but it's been a radio show for like 30 something years.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of old episodes online. Like, there were, WFMU was very early on in the idea of what if we put our shows out on the internet, and this show has been going for way longer than podcasts have existed. And mm-hmm. I have a friend who like went back as deep in the catalog as you could get and listened to like everything that they had. And I've always been like wildly impressed with that, because it's like, I mean, it's a show I love. I still listen to it like almost every week, but it's also like, I don't know if I can go back to like 1999, you know?
When you and I were walking around lately, one of the things we talked about randomly was like, that we don't know how many more years of Greatest Gen there are.
Right.
And that maybe that's something that's spreadsheetable. Wendy, our great producer, has been like making hella good spreadsheets for us that have kept us organized. And I bet she's got the answer. Like, I bet she knows the end date for Greatest Gen. And I have no idea when that might be. I think it could be anywhere between 5 and 15 years from now.
We have a long way to go with this spreadsheet.
But if it's 5, does Greatest Discovery then just become the main show at the rate they keep putting out new Star Trek?
We've always talked about the Golden Gate Bridge model of Star Trek podcasting, which could be our...
The unfortunate device used for suicide... ever since its creation, is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. When you finish painting, you go back to the other side and start painting again.
This is not us looking for a way out. I am just wanting to I don't know, man, like, are we gonna be like 60-year-old men when Greatest Gen ends?
This is a great thing to be talking about on a week when we're making our pitch to the listeners to become sustaining members of our show.
That's right, because this is going to be the one that outlasts them all.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the good news is we have The Greatest Discovery to make an investment in future Trek.
Right. It'll never end. I mean, unless the support dries up.
Yeah, I guess so. We probably should have named it better.
I continue to have regrets about that. Especially when you see Greatest Generation on a marquee. Uh-huh. And then the subtitle is a podcast. Like, that is totally inscrutable to anyone.
Man, I just wonder if anybody shows up to any of our live shows because they saw our name on a marquee. We have this debate all the time. Like, one of the things that happens when you book a tour is you get, there's a contract between us and every venue, and we don't usually see that contract because it's handled by a booking agent. But
our booking agent and friend.
Yeah, I put that in the wrong order. I'm sorry. But one of the things in the contract is how much they're going to spend on promoting the show. That is right. Something that, like, either the promoter or the venue usually does. And
it should be zero, right?
It should be zero. We should get that money. Like, they should just give us that money.
Because any walk-up traffic is going to walk out after 10 minutes.
And ask for their money back specifically.
Right.
But yeah. Also, like, I put myself in the shoes of a venue. Like, hey, do you want to book this podcast? They don't want you to spend any money advertising it.
Yeah. Get us an extra hummus with the marketing budget.
Yeah, that's what we should do. Get us some hummus.
I don't know. I feel like we've been doing good on the backstage area. The spread has been getting better and better.
It's been consistent, yeah.
Yeah.
Been getting good hummus this tour.
Yeah, great hummus, really.
We got Puff Daddy's type of tequila. We should put E40 as our tequila on our rider. It should be E40's tequila. I don't want Puff Daddy's tequila.
I haven't ever had it, and you're predisposed to thinking it's great, but what if I think it's shit?
Come over to my house. We'll share a couple of glasses of E40.
I thought the Puff Daddy tequila was good.
It was fine.
And I wanted to dislike it. It was good.
It was good. Yeah, it was perfectly acceptable. The guy that founded it and then sold it to Diddy went on to found a whiskey brand with Drake, so.
Oh. Gonna have to try that whiskey then.
Yeah. Imagine being a celebrity booze, the other guy, serial entrepreneur.
I mean, that's where I'd want to be, I think. I don't want to be the face.
Yeah, no.
But you want to make the deal with the artist.
Mm-hmm.
That way you get all the benefit.
Yeah. You get to party with Diddy.
Mm-hmm.
I want to party with E40.
What's up with it?
You under dig?
All right. That's all anyone is going to know about our tour rider.
I mean, listen, one time we did a show and somebody had heard we like to have hummus backstage at a show, and they brought like a Safeway bag full of containers of hummus to the show. How much happier would we have been if they'd brought in a Safeway bag full of bottles of E40?
I mean, very happy until it came time to pack. This is the problem with touring and the generosity of the Friends of DeSoto is like, we're getting on planes and it makes traveling with as much liquor and booze gifts as we want really difficult. That's why we keep it tight.
So drink up.
Yeah. It's weird and hard to ship booze cross country too. Like,
yeah.
If you want, even if you wanted to ship it to yourself, I think it's kind of hard to do.
Yeah. I think we are doing a good job of taking care of ourselves on this tour. W/R/T, the drinking.
Yeah.
Things aren't getting out of hand. I think we're figuring out our own personal level.
Toronto being the notable exception, things are not getting out of hand.
Right. I know exactly how many celery sticks and and hummus spoons I can take before any show. So far, and I don't want to speak too soon, none of us have had to leave the stage to use the bathroom. That was an almost every night occurrence the last time we went out on tour.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have been in Boston by the time this comes out, so you don't know. You might have to leave me on stage again.
I mean, Boston's going to be a wine show, so
yeah,
that's how it could play out.
Yeah, Boston and DC both are going to be wine shows.
Yeah, those, of course, being in the past, the only remaining show at this point is going to be Austin.
Yeah, and maybe an LA one? I mean, maybe we shouldn't even say that.
Yeah, way to keep teasing a thing like that.
Well, Adam, the tour is all well and fun, but do you want to get into the episode of Star Trek Picard that we came to talk about.
I have a feeling a lot of friends of DeSoto are asking us to end this Marin to give them some amount of the title of this episode of Star Trek Picard. It's Star Trek Picard Season 2, Episode 8, and it's called Mercy.
Mercy.
Ben, I noticed something in the pre-roll here that I was wondering if you had, which is the reference to nanoprobes in dialogue sounds so much like nanoprobes, like nanoborgs. That's what we need to call them.
Did we subconsciously make that connection, or is that...
I wonder if the show made us subconsciously do that. Like, if we got it from the show and then we turned it around to them.
It's Inception.
Just a billion little nanas crawling up in your face.
This bloodstream is cold.
You should use a moisturizer.
Are you ever going to ask that girl to marry you?
I thought you'd be further along in your career by now. You know, I think of your granddad every day.
I heard COVID was engineered in a lab. Oh, no, Nana, you've been watching OAN again.
We open at night, and there is a kid running with a flashlight through the forest. I'm just trained to believe any kid running right now is going to be Tiny Picard.
Oh.
But it's not, because this kid is a terrible runner.
Yeah. He doesn't have a theme song. He's running in the dark in the forest from some ETs. And these ETs happen to be Vulks.
Surprise, motherfucker.
This kid was always going to get caught.
Yeah.
He's just uncoordinated and flailing.
I mean, he's uncoordinated until he slides down that hill like fucking Ricky Henderson.
They should have Chris Farley'd this hill slide from Black Sheep.
Vote for Donnelly!
Like, how much kid versus hillside would you be able to tolerate on a show that took itself seriously? Statistically, they got to figure that out, right? Like, look, he's just a little kid. He should only slide like 15 feet and no rolls.
Yeah.
As soon as a kid starts rolling, things become absurd.
I did watch a bit of The Ready Room, and they said that they were considering just using the clip from Mac and Me, but then, you know, the character later in life doesn't use a wheelchair, so it wouldn't make sense.
That's why I didn't see it coming.
Right.
Yeah.
So in the present.
Show present.
Picard and Guinan are in an interrogation room that is also an evidence locker.
Yeah. It's a real dive.
Yeah.
If I ever get interrogated, I would hope that the room is cool as hell. Like befitting of someone of my stature.
Right. You want a The Rock level interrogation room.
Indeed. As it is, like from cold open to now through the entire episode, I'm not sure any episode of Picard has felt more like The X-Files to me. I've been watching a lot of X-Files at night.
Oh, really?
Before bed. There is a antenna television station in LA that shows it routinely, like every night at 10 p.m.
Wow.
So I'm taking down an X-Files episode, and this really felt that way to me, right on down to Wells, just the put-upon agent who has to do his business in the basement of the federal buildings that he works in.
This is super off the books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this definitely has basement windows. Like, the windows are like the thin windows at the top of the wall. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and Wells is definitely wearing like a very like 90s vintage schlubby suit too. Yeah. That's very X-Files.
He's got that federal agent confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Are you an extraterrestrial life form?
He's onto something here. At least he believes it. But Guinan is the one, and not Picard, that calls bullshit on this whole charade. Mm-hmm. And you think this is going to get them some leverage in this moment, but Wells isn't scared at all.
Wells is not scared, but also kind of Guinan isn't scared. Like, she's like laughing at him when he asks if they're extraterrestrials.
I mean, we saw Space Sting die in Star Trek Generations, so I'm sure Elarians can die. But there is an imperviousness to Guinan's attitude here, like throughout the series, right?
Yeah.
that it feels like no harm will fall her, especially in a moment like this.
Yeah. I mean, do you think she's just doing the math on like, well, this guy I know from the future, and I know that for sure because he made me barf on the floor of my bar.
Right.
So I'm kind of made in the shade for at least another couple of centuries.
As close of friends as you and I are, if I knew at any point we were in a room together, you could make me barf, I could never be 100% comfortable.
You wouldn't trust me?
No. I think this colors their entire relationship forever now.
That's why they're closer than friends, closer than family.
Boy, the service in 10 forward is pretty slow. Gaiden, should I tell you what my name is again and where I'm from?
She pulls out the Gaiden gun. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to go ahead and jump right to a medium setting of intensity.
Yeah. This trap that they're in is the cold open in the theme. And after the theme, we get a very different scene with Raffi and Seven outside the dive bar with the broken window where Jurati had been previously. They're giving Rios the update here. And Rios, I think Rios understands how bad the situation is, but he is in his own kind of hell because a ship that he loves, his own ship, the La Serena, is just filled with Borgware.
Yeah. He's pretty upset about that. This is another scene that made me think that maybe they shot a lot of stuff and then reordered when stuff was happening and in what episode.
Mm-hmm.
Just because this is kind of just like picking up like exactly where Raffi and Seven were. Like they called Picard in the clinic and then Picard had time to go to 10 forward, hang out with Guinan for a while, get arrested, get taken down, get booked. Yeah. Get brought into an interrogation room and Raffi and Seven are still like milling around on the sidewalk in front of the bar with the broken window.
I wonder how this is going to stack up when binged, you know, an entire season in a day or two for someone, yeah. You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it works, but it word on the street is that they had a lot of challenges with, you know, COVID protocols and stuff on this season of Picard, and we've noticed a lot of things that imply that there was like reshoots and dialogue written after the fact and stuff. So this is just like making my spidey senses tingle, this stuff, but it didn't like story-wise, it didn't bother me.
Right.
It just, I noticed it from a production standpoint.
This is a really long, odd situation for Raffi and Seven and finding Jurati, right? Like they know she's within 15 blocks, but 15 blocks in LA, in downtown LA specifically, is just an impossible area for two people to canvas. They basically are forced to follow a path of destruction if they want to find her, right?
Right.
Which in downtown LA could lead to a number of places. Like there are many paths of destruction.
Sure. Yeah. And many kinds of places they could end up.
Yeah.
They talked to the owner of the bar who is like not really into talking to cops about this.
I've seen how to deal with nutcases.
You know who he reminded me of? Hmm. He kind of looks like Admiral, you know what? My dream has always been to own a bar. Didn't he look to you like that guy if he had gotten out of a shower with poor water pressure and like... His hair had just been pushed down a bit.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think that's super far off. When he is satisfied that they are not cops and believes that Seven is destructive lady's sister, he gives a gesture off in a direction and said she went that away. And they're like, cool, we'll follow that trail.
With a man with a red beard, Ben. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no. You know what? Maybe this is a date that's just going really well.
Maybe.
You know, one of those dates that lasts until the morning and you just stay up all night and talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're lying on a hood of a car looking up at the stars.
Yeah. I bet that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
Can't see the stars in downtown LA, though. Too bright.
Yeah.
Too much light pollution.
The FBI guy has some footage of Picard and gang crashing the Europa gala. So he's kind of onto them. He's like,
why would aliens crash a gala for a space mission?
And Guinan is great in this scene
yeah.
because she starts bartending Wells's mind.
Yeah, she really turns the interrogation tables, doesn't she?
Yeah. And she starts serving up some high-proof observations about Wells.
What makes you the man for this job?
Enough that make Wells pretty uncomfortable, uncomfortable enough to leave.
She's like, what do you got in that commuter mug? Is that full of white wine?
Yeah.
He's like, you are good.
Because I could tell you all about your shitty life and how you ended up here.
Yeah.
That'll be all for now.
Where was that power at the end of the last episode, Guinan? When this guy was allowed to walk down the stairs and arrest you.
Yeah. Lock the door when you're not open.
Doesn't Guinan's bar seem like the place where there'd be a lot of traps?
It does.
What?
Yeah. I think I remember when we went to the 10 Forward experience in downtown LA that we did fall into various Home Alone style traps.
You did try to walk up that flight of stairs and all the boards like flipped over.
Flattened out. Yeah.
Picard really makes it seem as though they're at rock bottom here by being pinched.
Yeah.
Because he thinks now that what really might be the thing that breaks the future is their involvement with law enforcement. Like their presence in this room is going to be sufficient to scrub the Europa mission, you know, due to their suspiciousness, right?
Right.
And not because of Rene Picard.
Yeah, exactly. Like if the authorities begin to worry that the integrity of the mission is compromised, they'll just scrub the launch. That'll change the future and yeah. Q won't have had to do anything. Picard is like, God, I've heard all cops are bastards, but I didn't realize that extended to the FBI.
Isn't that right, Honey Bunch?
That's right, Poopy Hen.
If you've forgotten about Corey Soong.
She's back in this episode.
We're reminded after a few hours of Star Trek Picard. She's still watching OnlyFans videos of Adam Soong.
Yeah.
Over and over again, it looks like.
What are you hiding, Dad?
And she puts on a VR headset that is like on the end table there. And she's able to go inside the lab she saw on her computer in the videos that she was watching.
That is a cool technology, man.
I thought this was a really effective bit of dialogue leading to action in a super efficient way. Like, this is not a piece of technology I feel like we've seen on Star Trek before, and yet it is totally understandable what is happening here and why.
Right. It is an augmented reality thing that can take a video and extrapolate a space from it. And when she puts it on, she discovers that Q left a message for her in here. And all of that happens in like 15 seconds of screen time.
She doesn't get very far in the simulation before Q shows up. That's for sure.
He's got a pitch for her. Basically, turn on your daddy who failed me. I'll give you some blue goo. And then you're on my team.
This moment seems like a recitation of information we've received before, and even Corey has received before. And this is a moment that I felt like was a pretty heavy lift for any actor that Issa Briones does fairly well. Like, we talk all the time about act drunk and all the permutations thereof. But I think Issa Briones is made to act dumb quite a bit in her characters, like always being the last to know what their true nature is.
Yeah, not dumb, but like naive. Like she.
Right. But this moment with Q is like another version of that. She's the last to know what her truth is.
Yeah. Like she's watched a lot of these videos and still hasn't quite resolved it for herself.
That's why I think dumb is the right word to use.
Okay, fair enough.
She's been there for days, according to the show.
Am I an experiment?
She's watched the episode so often, she's memorized all of these names of her sisters.
Yeah, but Q has something delivered, nicely gift-wrapped, and it's another one of these bullets with the blue stuff. And this one has a tag that says freedom dangling from it. And we smash cut back to downtown LA where Seven and Raffi find Redbeardman. Jurati has totally speciesed him.
God.
I mean, we get so little of him next to the dumpster. I'm like, is he assimilated or dead? And as soon as my mind asks the question, Seven's like, oh, that guy's dead. And it's because the queen doesn't have the energy to assimilate yet.
Yeah.
So this was like an action killing. This was another event made to up the energy inside Jurati's body.
Well, there's a lot of jargon here, but the implication is that she wanted to fuck so that she could get more endorphins and hopefully assimilate, but it just didn't work. He couldn't satisfy her.
She grew frustrated, angry, took it out on what couldn't satisfy her.
You know what? Outside next to a dumpster is pretty difficult. All right?
Yeah.
I think we should stop making fun of the Redbeard here, Raffi and Seven.
We don't know that that's where they tried to do it.
Yeah.
There may have been a Volkswagen nearby that they tried to climb into the backseat of.
God, this poor guy. Poor Redbeard.
Yeah.
I mean, do you think there was ever a moment he was happy on this date? I sure hope so.
I mean, there was the moment where she said, "You're coming with me, bucko."
You know what? That's a pretty great moment.
Yeah.
The moment where you're fully optimistic. The moment before you really get to know a person.
It only stings for a moment.
Yeah. I mean, he did have a pretty tragic last couple of days, right? Like he was home alone, feeling sad about the collapse of his previous relationship. He talked himself into going out and seeing a band and shooting a little pool.
Yeah. Maybe he did well at pool that night. Maybe he hustled some suckers.
Yeah, but he wound up with his fucking neck snapped. It kind of looks like she MacGrubered him, right? Like maybe she like tore out the chunk of flesh in the front of his neck.
Does seem that way. It's real gross.
Ain't nothing but a McG thing.
This is the second time this episode that something not really having to do with Raffi and Seven's relationship is turned into a reason to argue about Raffi and Seven's relationship.
Yeah.
Because the description of the crime scene also describes Seven's inability to love Raffi.
Wow.
And why.
And that's incredibly spot on.
Can you not?
We're talking about Borg ladies that can't get satisfaction from their human counterparts.
Yeah.
That's the theme of this scene.
Yeah. They find Redbeard's phone not far away from the body. And with the battery taken out, it begs the question, like, what's the deal? Why would the battery be missing? And via conversation, we learn that these lithium ion batteries are filled with stabilizing metals. And they're very similar to the lidocaine that a medical procedure would introduce in order to make the second thing more possible.
Right.
Like, these stabilizing metals are used in assimilation so that the nanoprobes can slowly get into the bloodstream with their left turn signal on and get to work.
Can these nanoprobes even see over that steering wheel?
Nanoprobes shouldn't be driving.
So they go around a corner and discover a row of cars that have had their batteries ripped out. And I thought that batteries for cars were lead acid batteries.
They are. Yeah.
Do those also have stabilizing metal in them?
I don't know. I just saw this as like just a cooler visual than it makes sense.
Yeah. It should have been a flipped over Nissan Volt.
Right.
And she's taken the lithium battery pack cassette out and gone to town on it.
Yeah. I mean, they already depicted a Tesla being used in a hit and run. I guess they couldn't go back to that well.
Right. Yeah. Those are used in a different way in this show.
I love how much like a dinosaur Jurati looks on top of this car, like eating batteries or whatever.
Hold on to your butts.
I wanted to see her, like she's holding a piece of metal in her hand like a sandwich, and I really wanted to see her take a bite of it.
This is a really interesting performance.
Yeah.
Like Alison Pill is really doing a lot of different things here on this show.
You know, one thing she did in between last episode and this episode is get some combat boots because...
Did she steal them from the Redbeard?
Oh, maybe.
I didn't notice whether or not Redbeard had bare feet.
Yeah, I didn't either. But she definitely had bare feet when she went into the bar because she was dangling her expensive high heels behind her when she walked away from the gala.
Yeah. Maybe that was something they cut out of the dialogue from Admiral, I'm just living my dream here, pouring shots the way I always wanted to back when I had a square office job. Like maybe Jurati walked up and asked for the lost and found, and he's like, yeah, I got some stuff back here. I don't know why anyone would leave boots.
Yeah.
You can have these.
Why did she say she wanted my clothes, my boots, and my bike?
You forgot to say please.
It was weird.
Yeah. This is a different kind of Star Trek fight
that
lights off here.
This kind of reminded me of the character in what's that show called? Is it Serenity, the show?
Yeah.
There's that character who's like a head case.
Or Battlestar Galactica.
Who can kick butts.
Uh-huh.
And she's always wearing like an evening gown but combat boots.
Right.
That's definitely like a 90s TV character trope, I think.
I was disappointed that Seven got dispatched so quickly in this fight. Like, it was one move and then a counter move and Seven is gone.
Yeah.
And Raffi gets picked up by her throat. And this moment lasts so long. The Queen appears to be just torturing her to death.
Yeah. The Queen wants to know whether they intercepted a transmission. And Raffi's like, we intercepted no transmission. This is a diplomatic mission. And the Queen asks, if this is a diplomatic mission, where is the ambassador?
Commander, tear this ship apart until you found those plans and bring me the passengers. I want them alive.
Oh, yeah. All right. I get it now.
No wonder I'm president.
It was interesting how the eye change is the only thing that suggested that Jurati made the choice to save Raffi's life, right?
Right.
Like, there wasn't a twitch and her voice comes back or...
Right.
Anything like that. Like, it's fairly subtle for what it is.
Yeah. And I kind of wondered, like, the math that we've been brought in on here is that different emotional reactions lead to different kinds of action in the fight between the Borg Queen and Jurati having control. And I wondered if the stress of getting into a Star Trek fight like ceded some control back to Jurati because it was stressful and therefore not pleasurable to the Borg Queen.
I wonder if they played at all with whether or not it would be Seven instead of Raffi in this moment, because what I want from a scene like this is more direct contact between the Queen and Seven.
Right.
And how traumatic that would feel for Seven in that moment, you know?
Right.
But as it is, like, Raffi dusts herself off, Jurati walks away in slow motion, and we're on to the next scene.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
The next scene is Picard and Guinan waiting again in the interrogation room when FBI guy comes back in and he's like, boy, you are not going to believe what this guy Rios said when he was arrested by Homeland Security. It kind of corroborates everything I'm saying.
It's fun to hear Picard read the statement.
Barbaric interrogation techniques.
Rios really, really kicked a lot of butterflies in the teeth when they first got to this time period and has not really stopped since.
It's not just this dictation. It's the Confederation comm badge that is dropped onto the table as evidence of this trap closing in.
Yeah.
And like, maybe the worst part of it is Guinan being led to another room to be interrogated separately. Like,
yeah.
I hated that feeling. Like, with her, at least I feel safe.
Right. She can always do claw hands and get them out of it if she really needs to.
Yeah. If I'm Picard, I hate this moment.
Yeah. he's going to be talking about how many lights there are pretty soon.
Yeah.
There are four lights.
Back on the La Serena, we get kind of a lighter moment because Teresa and her son are there watching Rios work on his computer problem when he comes up with a fun idea to distract them. The food replicator, and it's cake time all over again, Ben. The last time we saw a scene of cake eating on the La Serena, it was Girardi making a return of the red velvet cake.
Yeah, which is represented in this scene. It's one of the four different types of cake that the replicator chooses to create for Ricardo.
Do you think the Confederation replicators have some different choices from the normal ones that the La Serena would have? Like, no non-human food choices probably would be on that replicator. Probably a lot of German chocolate cake. What? Was that one of the cake choices the kid makes?
I wonder if they don't use human shit. They use like other species shit because...
Oh, because it's like we conquered their culture and we took their culinary identity.
And now we eat their shit.
Yeah.
It's pretty good for shit.
Or maybe it's just all them actually. Like they're eating Cardassians.
Yeah.
You guys hungry?
Ricardo, that red velvet cake is made of Vulcans.
Yeah, how did they get it so red after their green innards were ground up?
Most peculiar.
That's a terrible joke construction. We need a green cake to be the Vulcan cake.
Yeah, or a pink cake to be the Klingon cake.
Grasshopper cake.
Is that a cake?
I don't know.
Pistachio cake?
That's what that Is It Cake show is about, right?
I think so, yeah.
Is It Star Trek cake?
Yeah.
Cake is eternal.
Boy. A fucking 30-second internet meme. They get an entire show out of it. Yeah. Unbelievable what a time we live in.
This kid is on the express train to Vomitville.
Yeah.
For sure. And really, like, introduces the ticking clock to this scene.
While that sword of Vomitcles hangs over Rios and Teresa, they get into almost like some role play. Like, she kind of suggests this scenario where... they're a couple that have been together for 10 years and have sort of drifted apart romantically and then like have a crazy road trip where they're thrust back together in a date-like context and start confessing things to each other. And she wants him to lay some secrets on her in that way.
When the actor who plays Teresa began this monologue, this story making, I felt in danger of getting like a toothache from the sugar. I was like, oh man, what if she doesn't stick the landing?
Yeah.
But the story had such a weird quality because when she begins, I'm like, I don't know if this is working for me. And the longer it went, the better it got.
Yeah.
It's almost like how comedy works. Like if you begin a bit and it's not quite working, it's sometimes like the longer you go, the more insistent you are to land it. It becomes funny in a kind of anti-comedy kind of way.
Sure. Yeah.
By the time the story ended, I was fully on board and totally enchanted by Teresa in this moment.
Yeah. I stan Teresa. She's very enchanting.
Not perfect, but I'm not that.
I mean, the other interpretation you could have is that this is just the show turning into a full telenovela.
Right. Like,
most of the scene transpires in Spanish and is like way more dramatic than has been up till now. But yeah, she's so fucking good. Like she completely sticks the landing. I almost feel like it's a bit of a deus ex machina that he doesn't get his answer out though, because that's when Ricardo announces that he has a tummy ache.
I like this actor. I want to look at what else Saul Rodriguez has been in because I think she's great.
Yeah, she rules. I like the kiss.
I mean, I don't love the specter of child vomit.
Yeah, but a kiss will make almost anything a little bit better.
Back in the interrogation room, Wells is on up in Picard's nook again. What is it about Picard that just invites a person up in there?
This is absurd.
Made me think maybe Wells is a Q.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. Because that's where Qs go.
Yeah.
Right up in the nook.
Right in that nook.
He makes that kind of threatening case that you see a lot in crime procedurals, which is, the good cop absent bad cop.
Right.
Of like, look, I know you think I'm a jerk in a suit I bought in 1998.
I'm the best friend you've got right now.
Yeah, this is as good as it's going to be because... And then the picture he paints is like straight out of X-Files. He's like,
yeah.
I'm as kind as it's going to get because the real spooks, once they get here, they're going to put you on a fucking table on a show that Jonathan Frakes narrates about whether or not you're an alien having an autopsy done to you.
Yeah. Yeah. The bad cops are alien autopsyists. And I'm the good cop. The other cop is the Q cop,
right,
who is interviewing Guinan. And I don't know if you saw, just like, he's out of focus in the background when the door opens and Delancey walks in, but he kind of trudges in like he's like exhausted by the effort to get there.
I love this performance by him.
The point that's made is he is responding to her summoning him.
Yeah.
It just took him a really long time to get there.
As if he had to deal with transiting there, which he did.
Took your damn time.
Yeah. And convincing people that he was an FBI agent, even though he's in like an FBI cardigan, maybe.
I love how Guinan does the hands here.
Yeah.
When he walks in.
I know. God, I want to see something come out of those hands.
It's a little below the frame, though. Like, they didn't really make it a focal point.
No.
But it's fun.
But she does it. She does the hands.
Q's like, you drank the summoning?
You're not supposed to just do that.
What's clear to Guinan in this scene is that the reason that doing the shot failed is because Q is dying. It's why he's snapping and nothing's happening.
Yeah.
It's why he had to take a fucking cab across town to get to this federal building.
Why do you think it took me so long to get here?
He's not quite interpreting it the same way she is. Like, she says he's dying and he says it's something else. Like, there is a horizon over which he can't see for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it's interesting because it's like he talks about it as the temporal horizon, but also like they've gone way far back in the past. So time does not work the same way for him as it works for us.
Right.
But yeah, like he wishes he could obliterate her, but he can't.
It's interesting how differently Data and Q approached this prospect. Like, they're using a lot of the same terminology about it. It's just that Q is not as excited to cross over as Data was. Data was so thirsty for death.
He's like trying to talk himself into being excited.
Yeah. Q is also not taking any responsibility for what's happened to Picard or the crew. And this whole conversation right now is one big riddle, at least to me.
Yeah. The, you know, I didn't choose to do this time travel part. That was their idea.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, Guinan doesn't have any context for why this is happening.
Right. Do you think she regrets taking the shot?
I mean,
sometimes you take a shot and you're like, God, that was the one, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was
the one I shouldn't have taken.
Tomorrow's going to suck.
Yeah.
That's what she's telling herself.
Yeah.
She's like, fuck, maybe I can find some pizza or something. Is there anything still open?
Is that bottle empty now? Like, it does not have the meeting between the Continuum and the Elarians in it anymore? Like,
I don't
can
know.
You never call the Q again after that?
Is that... Yeah, could nobody ever... Because it seemed like it was the one bottle.
Yeah.
And it really looked like that was the last of it, the way she poured it out.
I hate that idea.
It looked like Kanar, too. It was,
did,
like, kind of sludgy in that Kanar way.
Right now, there's a bar back at 10 forward that's like doing the trash and recycling. And if Guinan didn't leave a note, that thing's going in the garbage.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah.
And he's like, I wonder where the boss is. She didn't even lock the door when she left work. What the hell?
So Q walks out of here and kind of leaves Guinan to stew on the conversation they just had.
See you when I see you, unfortunately.
Back over at Casa de Soong. Adam Soong tries to apologize to Corey, I guess. If you even considered this an apology, it's kind of an explanation apology. He's not coming correct with the quad box like he needs to.
Yeah, he uses a lot of the word if.
Mm-hmm.
It really is that like awkward next morning, like, I kind of went crazy last night.
Yeah.
I talked to you about you as being my greatest creation. That wasn't cool. If I hurt you, I'm sorry.
But this is the thing. Like, he doesn't know how much Corey knows, and Corey is armed with all of this evidence.
Yeah.
Maybe the worst part is all of the crazy names that she recites at him, like in his face. Like, who gives people these names?
Despoina.
You never thought about, like, the other kids making fun of them for having these names?
Persifossa.
They were obviously never going to live long enough to go to school.
Yeah, yeah. Cruel.
And that's just sad.
He admits that she's an experiment, but he denies that that would make her any less his daughter, which I felt like he didn't even like see how compelling that could be. Like if he just, like if that was his honest truth, he could have sold that, but it's not really.
It is just really ugly how Sung describes himself and his relationship to his work.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like really grossly articulated.
Yeah. And the way a narcissist genuinely would defend this, like,
right,
you're like the achievement of my force of will. And
also, like, how narcissistic is it in his reaction when Corey leaves? It's not like concern for Corey leaving for Corey's sake. It's that he's enraged by the possibility of losing his great creation.
Yeah.
By losing the possibilities of that.
You don't exist without me.
You know, you follow me, I call the cops.
And it now really feels like he's as dangerous as the Borg Queen right now in his own way. Like,
totally.
Borg Queen, definitely number one. But like the look on Brent Spiner's face when she turns and leaves is so withering.
Yeah.
You really feel like everything's on the table here.
Corey's like kicking off her slides and stepping barefoot into the grass as fuck you, Dad.
Yeah.
The grass feels nice.
It's an amazing moment.
Yeah. She plays chicken with the sun and wins. Not many people do that.
Meanwhile, in downtown LA, Seven and Raffi are just getting back on their feet after their ass kicking by Nanoborg / Jurati.
I'm all right. Come on. No, I'm almost all right.
I didn't see their phaser. Their phaser got knocked away. Like, Jurati kicked it in the fight scene. I didn't see it ever get recovered, and I'm really worried about the phaser right now.
Yeah, good call. We gotta find that thing.
Yeah, can't leave that in the past. What if Chronoworks get their hand on it?
My products benefit the entire world. What's good for Chronoworks is good for everybody.
A Rainn Robinson cameo in one of the last two episodes would be great, right?
Boy, it really would be.
What's up?
Be some solid stuff.
Everything you guys do is just a little bit off.
Rainn, you're fantasizing.
And you're insulting my intelligence.
Well?
Not in an empty stomach.
I don't want to be disappointed by having that kind of hope.
I'm sorry I suggested it.
This is another moment used to create an argument between Raffi and Seven, right?
Yeah. They come up with the idea of like, okay, this dude's phone had the battery pack ripped off the back of it, but maybe if we plug it into the tricorder, we can boot it up and get some idea of where she might have gone. And while Seven is working on this technology problem, Raffi admits to her that she does manipulate people. Seven has been accusing Raffi of being a manipulator. And the flashback is of Raffi and Elnor hanging out on the La Serena. The first lines Elnor has gotten in a lot of episodes.
Yeah, no kidding.
And it's an Elnor that has not yet matriculated at Starfleet Academy, who's theoretically there to be learning something from Raffi, but he's just radical candoring her to death.
There's honor in truth.
Oh, yes.
It's funny how for so long we've seen scenes where having a conversation with a co-op Malat can be like frustrating or irritating or number of things. But like Raffi can hang in a conversation, and it's interesting how her passive aggression is like an equal amount of power against the radical candor. Like they really can spar effectively in a conversation. And it's a conversation that Raffi ends up kind of winning.
Yeah, because his idea is like, maybe I'll defer a year and go to Vashti and cut a few more people in half before I start my studies. And she doesn't want to lose him. She doesn't want him going away.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's your life.
When we come back to the present, she's kind of processing this as a, like, I feel guilty that he got shot because if I had manipulated him out of going to Vashti, he wouldn't have been there, but he chose to learn. And Therefore, he is dead.
Choose to learn.
That's what they say when you take the oath at Starfleet Academy.
Yeah. Then you slice your graduation cap in half when you graduate.
Ladies and gentlemen of the class of 99, wear sunscreen.
So they find the search history and they're like, fuck, why was she searching that? Ugh.
What is a Pornhub?
We come from a future where we don't have these things. We just have Quark's bars and holosuites.
Back at Casa de Sung, like, I'm really starting to get the bends on like how much time has passed. The passage of time thing in Star Trek Picard season 2, not something that we have a good grasp of.
Because he is like 7/8 of the way through a fifth of whiskey.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if you're really upset, I guess it wouldn't take you that long to do. But I love this composition, Ben, because Dr. Sung is literally at rock bottom, at the bottom of his stairs. And in walks Nanoborgs / Girardi at the top of the stairs as his salvation. He's like a Renaissance painting.
And he goes, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Stomping on in those boots.
Yeah. She's like, I took the 101 to the 405 to the 10, and I got off at PCH and took it all the way up here.
Have you been working on your Californian's accent? It's really sharp. <Why not? laughs>
Just living here, I guess.
Yeah. I assume a lecture on the futility of resistance is not going to be necessary.
So a new alliance is sort of formed here.
Yeah, don't like that.
You'll get over it.
Back in the interrogation room, shouldn't Picard have needed to go to the bathroom like 4 times by now?
You still got the catheter in from the last episode.
It's taped to my leg.
In my time, it's called a stadium pal.
We learn in this scene that the Europa mission launches 19 hours from now. So now we know what the passage of time is going to be henceforth.
Yeah. Guinan flickers into the room, like the lights flicker, and then Guinan is sort of like in a ghostly way present. And she's repeating back some stuff to Picard about how humans always live in the past. And we cut away to Guinan in the other room, and she's like got the nosebleed of somebody that is doing a psionic thing that is right at the edge of their ability to do it.
Yeah, it's a very Stranger Things effect, isn't it?
It is.
Picard's like, I'm Jean-Luc Picard, and it breaks the spell, and Guinan just shits her pants. Ben, I would never hang out with you if you could make me vomit on cue. Couldn't do it.
But I can make you shit your pants.
You can.
You don't seem to mind that.
That is weird, isn't it?
It's kind of funny.
I've gotten so used to it.
Et moi aussi.
You know, that makes me a lot like Picard in this scene.
Yeah, yeah.
Very comfortable just letting it go.
You remember how my friend started interrogating you? Well, now I shall. Why are you here? What makes you so interested in me? Obviously, you're not the best and brightest the FBI has to offer, or you'd be vivisecting me.
Right. Right. Maybe there's some kind of deal that they can come to.
Yeah. This guy starts going back into his own story, and he is the boy in the forest.
Right.
He is the boy that gets caught by the Vulcans when the Vulcans were doing a bunch of Vulcan shit in the woods.
Does a Vulcan shit in the woods? I mean, that's the easiest show title we've ever found. That's it. Yeah.
There it is.
That's right. It was right there the entire time. What he describes is a easily discernible to Picard as a mind meld. This Vulcan was trying to erase the memory of what this little boy walking alone in the forest had seen, but got beamed away too quickly. He got beamed up mid-meld.
I mean, this is a thing that if you're a younger Vulcan, I think you probably think is real, but really isn't. Like, there's no such thing as blue meld.
Yeah.
Like, this guy was not able to finish, but he was clearly fine when he beamed back to his ship.
Well, it's like these young Vulcan guys on Ponfar will kind of say anything to get what they want. They're like, oh, it's either I have to do combat or have sex. There's no other thing.
How about just a tip of a finger? That'll do. That'll do in a pinch.
Show me what he did with his hand.
If you give a Vulcan a cookie, though.
Yeah. This interrupted mind meld is what stops the Men in Black effect from happening to Wells as a kid. He remembers.
And he, like...
Like Pepperidge Farm. You remember.
And Picard is like, I know a lot about being a child who misinterpreted a thing that happened in a dark place and has been...
There it is, Ben. Like you asked the question in the last episode about the sequencing of some things. I really wonder if this hits better with a little more air between last episode and this.
Yeah, because I don't think there's anything wrong with it per se.
No,
but it's the proximity thing.
Yeah,
that is a little bit clunky.
You're just like me in a way.
The other thing that's clunky is Picard saying, like, that was no monster, it was a Vulcan, and then cutting back to Wells and him like sitting down in a chair, like, oh, I never considered that.
Yeah,
he doesn't know what the fuck a Vulcan is.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't know what a mind meld is.
Picard could explain this a little bit better.
But mind meld kind of is what it says on the tin, right?
I guess so, yeah.
You don't open up the package of mind meld and there's a Batleth inside.
Right. He kind of chooses to believe Picard. It seems like this is...
Well, this is like Lawyer Picard coming back, right? Like the music swells.
Yeah.
And Picard has turned him.
Yeah. The deal was, we'll confess to each other. Like, you tell me a secret and I'll tell you a secret. And Picard's like, my secret is that I'm actually the hero of the television program.
And I am here to save the entire galaxy.
It doesn't seem super far-fetched if you totally buy Wells' crusade. Like, if he only ever joined the FBI to prove the existence of extraterrestrials for himself. And I think that's a bit of dialogue that's really important here, right? When when the danger of whether or not other people are going to show up to take Picard to be vivisected,
right?
That's not happening because Wells was in it for him. And because he found out the true nature of Picard and that there is the reality of life on other planets, like, he's satisfied to be done with that crusade.
Yeah. Pretty amazing Lawyer Picard moment.
Yeah.
In a life history of amazing Lawyer Picard moments.
You want proof of your crusade? Well, here I sit.
Back on the La Serena, Rios goes over to the transporter and Ricardo like sidles up alongside him and starts banging on buttons as Ricardo has been doing. And Rios discovers that the transporter is offline and he goes, we've got a big problem. Where are our shits going to go?
And he points over to Ricardo and he's like, specifically, where is that little shit going to go? Because he is now full of cake and complaining of a stomach ache.
Yeah. And Teresa is super late for work at this point. Like, there's a lot of problems linked to the transporters being out.
That's a great call. What's going on at the free clinic right now?
Doors are unlocked. People are sitting in the waiting room waiting to be seen.
Hey, we got to make a bet.
Okay.
Is Teresa going to the future just like Dr. Gillian in Star Trek IV?
And when she goes to the future, is she going to like knee Rios in the nuts right at the last minute and say, I took an assignment on another ship?
Yeah. Her world's going to get really big. I could do a lot better than this guy.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I think that's how it's shaken out, right?
Yeah.
But that would also be sad too, right? Because she's doing so much good in her time. Like, to take her off the board in her timeline would actually be a sad thing.
It would be a sad thing. I mean, I think it was sad in Star Trek IV. Like, Dr. Gillian was an important voice for the maintenance of old trucks.
She single-handedly kept her mechanic in business with her total piece of shit jalopy.
I have a notorious weakness for hard luck cases. That's why I work with Whale.
We don't want to be in any trouble.
So the FBI guy comes in with like a banker's box with a participation trophy and an orange and
and take out food.
The stuff in this box really cracked me up.
Yeah. I feel like in a prop department, there are like three different versions of the banker's box of a guy who's leaving his job.
Yeah.
And they're pre-filled. It's just off the shelf. You just take it off and it's ready to go.
Yeah, it's perfect. it's all like glued together so it doesn't shake around and cause mic noise.
That orange isn't going anywhere.
No. That's a plastic orange, my friend.
Stunt orange for sure.
Picard is like, I thought you filed a bunch of paperwork. I thought we were totally screwed. And he's like, yeah, that was just game. I was trying to extract a confession. Now I quit, and I'm going to stand here by the door and let the two of you get out of here.
Yeah. It's interesting how the episode saw fit to give Wells an ending.
Yeah.
It's not just that his entire life's work has been completed and there's like a sadness about it.
Right.
But that like Guinan gets an opportunity to counsel him and like implores him to kind of reframe this experience as a positive. Like, you get the rest of your life, man. Like, terrible moments don't just have to be terrible. They can be inflection points for good things down the road.
Yeah.
And I feel like she should kind of look at Picard as she's saying that. And maybe in a weird way she is.
Yeah. Well, and I also just think like there is a corny ass storyline where they're like, now we have an FBI agent on the team and he's going to use the full power of the federal government to solve our future problem, you know? And
like,
I am so fucking glad that that is not happening.
This is a plot that is not getting the police escort to the season finale, you know?
Right. That would suck ass.
Yeah.
Instead, we go to Malibu, where Jurati is now, like, I don't know if they're, like, doing something sonically or if this is just something that Alison Pill is doing in her performance, but she's starting to kind of speak the way that Nana Borg speaks.
Yeah.
Even, like, her accent has changed a little bit.
Yeah. There's a fun expression she's borrowing, too.
Yeah. The pitch that she makes to Adam Soong is, you can let Corey go. You can become a founding father of the future, or you can like hang out here and drink yourself to death and I don't give a shit.
Yeah. I mean, it all has to do with whether or not he allows Rene Picard to fly the mission.
Yeah.
If she flies the mission, it's Vomitville for Adam Soong. And if she doesn't, he ends up saving humanity and gets all the credit for doing so with a bunch of statues in front of buildings.
Right.
And I mean, if you're given that choice, that's a choice that makes itself, right?
He wakes up and chooses statue.
Yeah. But first, Picard. You got to get him out of the way.
Right.
Jean-Luc Picard, I should say.
Right. They got to get his ship. They got to get strapped.
Yeah. This is the big takeaway from this episode is that like what the Queen really needs is like the biggest energy source of all, and it's not going to come from any car battery or cell phone.
Right.
The La Serena is really the place to be if she wants to take over.
Yeah.
And everyone in Guinan's bar learns of this together.
Yeah. This sort of seems like it's maybe goodbye to Guinan for the season, right?
Yeah, this moment made me sad because I really liked having her around. But it does seem like there's a weight to this goodbye that is significant.
So Picard and Raffi and Seven head out. And the idea is we can go use Talum's smoky door to get to the La Serena.
Finally!
It just sucks that Talon and Guinan don't get along because like we could hop through that smoky door right now. But they can't even be in the same room.
Yeah, yeah. And also it sucks because like all three of them take shits before leaving her bar because they know that when they go back, it's, you know, it's going to be out of the picture. And she's like, really? All three of you fucking shitting up the bar?
This is personal.
I'm the admiral. I get to go first. I'm pulling shit rank.
Yeah. Then Raffi manipulates Seven into going last. And then Seven resents Raffi.
I'm sure Seven's seen some pretty ugly shits on the Borg ship, right?
Oh, man. Those guys take techno dumps.
I mean, you remember the wide shot the very first time we saw the interior of a Borg ship, right? Like, there's just a river. Like, there's an open sewer running through every Borg ship.
That's true. the last moment in the episode, Jurati is starting to really look Borg-y. She's getting a little bit gray of skin. She's got Borg nanoparticles in the tip of her finger. Soong has arranged for a bunch of soldiers of fortune from the private military operation that he's done work with in the past to be detailed to them. And Jurati jumps into assimilating them. We're going to have Borg special forces on our hands.
Who's in the mood to add a little of their biological and technological distinctiveness to our own?
And that is the dun-dun-dun to the end.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to have Borg special forces on our hands, assuming the rest of these guys don't start shooting when they see what she does to the first guy.
That's fair. That's what they should do.
Quite the dun-dun-dun. When you were done with the episode, Adam, did you find that you had enjoyed yourself?
I hadn't thought about this question until you were talking about this final scene, but it totally relates to whether or not I like the episode or not. Is Adam Soong totally insane? And the reason I ask that question is he does not interrogate Q's identity hardly at all. And when Nanoborgs shows up at his house, who does he think she is? Because she keeps on talking about like what she could do for him. But at no point is Adam Soong like, how do you know all this stuff? And how are you able to do that thing with your fingers? And why are you turning gray? There are like really logical questions that I feel like any character could and should be asking at any given moment with her.
Right.
But Nanoborgs can just wander into any situation unchallenged, just at the most basic level. Just like, hey, why do you look like that? Is a question no one asks. Right. And it's kind of a magical thinking that Adam Soong has here. And I wish just for a moment, especially with Nanoborgs, like I'm fine with Q, like the magic that Q can provide in terms of the medicine for his daughter is like sufficient to blow minds. So I understand why asking what Q wasn't top of mind, but like he spends a lot of time with Nanoborgs.
Yeah.
And there may be just a lot happening off camera that we don't get, but I really want to know if they're going to be in league together for another couple of episodes. I want to know what the foundation of their relationship is more than the potential for him to have a statue built and like the idea of his legacy. Like he's got to trust her. And I don't know that there's enough there for that.
I think there's a crucial moment in his argument with Corey in this episode where he like rejects categorically the idea of reality as being something that only schmucks buy into.
You know what? That's the answer to my question then. It's because he's rejected reality, he doesn't need to question the characters that come into and leave his life. And so he's totally riding Adam Soong the ride.
Right. Yeah. He really is. And I mean, fortunate for him, reality is totally implausible at every turn. So it's easy to reject. Like, it's easy to interpret reality as being something that only sheeple live in or whatever.
I'm glad we talked that out because that was a detail that got past my mind goalie. But now it totally checks out.
Yeah. It's a very weird episode. I hadn't thought to put the lawyer Picard framework around the interrogation scenes, but in retrospect, I think I like them more with that as a way to think about them. The episode we just watched and the one before it both feel really messy in terms of scene order and timeline and proximity to each other and a bunch of other things. But
wouldn't it not surprise you if they were swapping scenes between episodes for like the last three?
Not at all.
Yeah.
But I think that despite that, like they wind up with three episodes that are pretty successful on their own merits.
This is a quality to like video production that I really struggled with. Like when I made a video series for a client, sometimes scenes would end up in subsequent episodes and not where they were intended and stuff. And you watch and you edit so often over the course of days and weeks that like you just lose whether or not it makes sense.
Right. Yeah. You know all the things, so you don't remember what has been established and what hasn't been established yet and stuff.
Like editing at a professional level for film and television. I really wonder how difficult it is on some projects to just hold it in your head like that.
Yeah.
And what your notes are like in order to keep things straight.
I can't even imagine. I mean,
yeah.
It's one of those things that is like, this is why like hundreds and hundreds of people work on an episode of television like this. Cause yeah. like you need that many brains like holding it together to yeah. make it happen.
Yeah. It's really wild.
Yeah. Well, do you want to go check out if there's anything really wild in the P1 inbox, Adam?
Sure do, Ben.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Well, the one thing that holds together episodes of The Greatest Discovery is the support of the Friends of DeSoto that go to MaximumFun.org/join. This is a Max Fun Drive episode right now, which means we have no priority one messages.
Yeah, but if you'd like to get a P1 for a future episode, it's MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. And if you'd like to be a member and you're listening to this after the drive, you can always do that. It's MaximumFun.org/join. Become a monthly member.
Yeah, and while this isn't a moment to read a priority one message, it's probably a great opportunity to just say thanks
yeah.
for supporting the show.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself an Edward Larkin?
Edward Larkin! I'm going to go with Girardi this time.
All right.
/ Nana Borgs for finding the most intense combat boots
yeah.
off screen in between the two episodes with no explanation for where she got them.
Yeah. There is a deleted scene of combat yeah. boots guy.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
probably pretty fun.
Yeah, I wish we'd gotten that.
Like, Nana Borgs is an excellent pool player and decides to, like, bet a guy for his boots.
Or a lady. I mean, they yeah. seem to fit her pretty well, you know?
Yeah, but you know Nana Borgs knows all the angles.
Yeah.
On a pool table.
It's true. Did you have an Edward Larkin, Adam?
It is kind of crazy the way Rios just chooses seduction and beams Teresa and her kid to the La Serena.
Chaos.
I mean, that is way out there in terms of decisions.
Yeah.
But I think Rios choosing seduction is sufficient for an Edward Larkin nomination. So
yeah.
for that reason, he's going to be mine.
He gets a kiss from the beautiful Teresa for his trouble.
You know what? You got to smush some butterflies in exchange for that kiss. I think it's worth
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. I'll smush all the butterflies if it leads me to pitching a tent in my pants camp. For Teresa.
You know what? He's smushing for a chance to smash. You know what? That's a totally incoherent t-shirt, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah.
We have two episodes coming out next week. Next week, we will have episode 9 of Star Trek Picard and episode 1 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. And
wow, really?
Really, Adam. We're going to drop our recap of Star Trek Picard on the 3rd, on Tuesday, and then we will have an extra episode on Friday next week about the first episode of Strange New Worlds, the day after that comes out.
How do we do all this, Ben? It seems impossible.
We do it because we have an amazing producer and editor in Wendy Pretty who looks at a calendar and actually understands what she's looking at. Unlike you and me,
right.
And tells us what we need to record and when in order to get stuff turned around in time. I'm really, really excited for this. I think it is so cool that we're able to keep up at the pace of release that the Star Trek Industrial Complex is releasing episodes. So tune in for both of those next week.
Thanks, Wendy, and thanks to everyone who's supporting The Greatest Discovery during Max Fun Drive 2022.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced by me. Next up on Star Trek Picard, it's Episode 9, Hide and Seek. Picard and crew fight for their lives as they come under attack from a new incarnation of an old enemy. Thanks to Adam Ragusea for the original music that we use on this show. Make sure you're subscribed to his YouTube cooking channel and his new podcast.
And thanks to Bill Tilly, who handles all the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Greatest Trek and use the hashtag Greatest Discovery to talk about the show online. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
Premium shit. Adam and Ben are always funny.
Oh, yeah. They've never misspoken once.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.